This is In The Fight, a Section 247 show presentation. Follow us on social media, Twitter and Instagram, at In The Fight Show, on Facebook at facebook.com/In The Fight Show.
Welcome back to In The Fight, a combat sports experience, coming to you live on Sportinarium Radio, sportinarium.com in the UK, at Sportinarium on the Twitter machine. You can find this show here on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at In The Fight Show. You can also go to inthefight.net. That will give you everything, links to our social media, current articles, and a feed for the podcast. So if you missed an episode, you can find it there. I am the Doc. I am joined, as always, by Brett Halpern. Brett, how are we doing today?
Doing well, feeling good, recovered from the ridiculousness that was Triller, and excited for UFC 261.
Yeah, UFC 261 is going to be an interesting one. We're going to get to that in a little bit, but you mentioned it, so let's start with it. Triller Fight Club. There was a lot of questions. We posed a lot of questions on this program. What exactly Triller Fight Club was going to look like. How was it going to work? A couple days before the event actually takes place, Triller announces that they have acquired Fight TV, the streaming service. So that makes sense now, from a standpoint of this is where it's going to be. It's still Fight TV as of right now, and that's where it is going to stream. That was the most simplistic part of the whole event, is where it was going to be, where you were able to find it. You could find it on Fight. This thing, man, you had texted me that this is boxing's version of the Yama, the pit bull fighting. And I had to laugh. I checked in here and there on it as I was doing a bunch of different things. I was watching UFC. Whew, wow. This was interesting. You had to tell me that they did it in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, the dome down in Atlanta. I thought it was in a warehouse somewhere.
Well, they were going for, I guess, like warehouse chic. It was kind of, remember in Zoolander, Derelict, the homeless people, that was the what Mugatu was trying to design. It was kind of like the whole vibe of this event. It was ridiculous. As the guy once said in the end of the Billy Madison movie, we're all dumber now thanks to Triller. And yeah, I mean, we'll break it down, but literally every element to this show was either an embarrassment or a disgrace, oftentimes both.
If they wanted to come off as like that urban, it's in a warehouse kind of thing, I think of like Lucha Underground in the world of wrestling, Wrestling Society X, dating myself probably about 15 years, but that was held in a warehouse. Perhaps you can go find yourself a bingo hall somewhere that's already set up with boxing lights and a ring and all this stuff, but you can tell it is a bingo hall in South Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And you don't even have to try to make it look like a warehouse because it is a warehouse. I don't know.
Well, to me, I don't understand how you could do an underground theme with, and I'm not commenting on if they are good or not, but the names that they had that were performing were big names. Justin Bieber, whether we like it or not, is a big name. There's nothing underground about Justin Bieber. Yeah, there's something underground perhaps about the nature of the fights, but not about if you're going to have a set with Justin Bieber, it's going to be this big elaborate thing like you'd see on a big tour or something you would see for the Grammys. So it doesn't make sense. Then I don't mind the combination of music and fights, but the timing and duration of the sets of the music were far too long and completely disrupted the flow of the show.
You watched it much longer than I did. Now, I've obviously seen, I saw Frank Mir's fight. I saw Ben Askren's fight, but you watched the whole thing. Flow of the show. How many people were there? It was weird. It was like hard to tell. Were there people there or was this a closed set?
I think there were people there, but I don't understand if you were not within the sphere, I'm using the terms, if you were not within the structure that they built, I don't even understand how you could see anything. So it was clear based upon the main event and what happened, there were definitely people there because it was a loud reaction, but I didn't see where they were sitting.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing to me reeked originally. We had an episode on it where and we talked about this. You know, there is a place and time for celebrity boxing, and that's what this is. This is a YouTuber who is makes a lot of money, a lot more than you and I, but God bless him, who is pretending to be a boxer.
Yeah,
at this point, you know, I guess we'll get into it. We'll get into Jake Paul when we get to Jake Paul. But all right, so we got the design element is it's an underground fight club, right? It's Raw Underground. Yeah. They stole the Raw Underground set. That's what happened. That's where it went. Makes sense now. Let's talk about the commentary team because
there are people who I actually didn't even know who they were, but there was Mario Lopez, you had Snoop Dogg, Pete Davidson, Oscar De La Hoya, and then Al Bernstein, who I guess was supposed to be there to lend some legitimacy to it. But to me, it was such a sin because Al Bernstein has been involved with some of the biggest fights in the history of boxing since, you know, the mid to late 80s until the present. And now you have him and he's talking on the broadcast about getting his first ever like contact high. So, you know, to me, more than anything, what was pushed in this event was marijuana, right? So, look, I'm not going to get into a huge discussion on the efficacy.
Were the Diaz brothers there?
The Diaz brothers were not there.
No, because that could have been a problem if they were.
No, but I forget which person was hyping their rolling paper. But so my thing is, look, I have no issue. I don't myself smoke pot. I have absolutely no issue. I am for the legalization of pot. To me, the reason this came out annoying, and Mike, I'm sure you remember in high school, there were people who chose to smoke pot and it's like, it's fine. Then there were the people who thought they were cool because they chose to smoke pot. And that's the vibe I got throughout this entire show. I don't care what you do. But just because you do something doesn't make you cool or anything else. And that was part of it. Then you had Oscar De La Hoya, who is known for having substance abuse issues, who was either drunk, high, and you know, whether he was high on marijuana, cocaine, I don't know. But the rest of the commentary team was just laughing and enjoying it. Mario Lopez hugging him and talking to him with such reverence when the guy's literally falling off the wagon in front of you. That to me is a sin and a disgrace. So I don't know why you should celebrate that. And meanwhile, he's talking about his upcoming match on July 3rd, which against, we don't know.
Yeah.
Rumor is it might be Eddie Alvarez.
Oh, which, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. It's never ending with this. It's part of this, I think, is boxing's way to get back in mixed martial arts because mixed martial art fighters don't get paid the way they should.
Oh, we're going to get to that later.
And we're going to get to that.
We'll get to Bellator.
And all of a sudden, you have guys who are willing to take the payday and lose, and it makes the sport look bad. So the commentary was a joke. Pete Davidson, if you didn't want to hit him before this, you definitely want to hit him now. I mean, he's such a schmuck.
The guy from Saturday Night Live?
Yeah, the albino.
The kid from like Staten Island,
yeah,
guy?
Yeah. They showed a clip of him going into Jake Paul's locker room and being like, oh man, you know, I can't wait to see you knock out, what's his name? I can't wait to see you knock out Ben Askren. He's a tool. Then he goes into Ben Askren's locker room and says, "I can't wait for you to knock out Jake Paul. He's a douchebag." Like it was just the dumbest thing I have ever seen. And why is Pete Davidson there? He brings nothing to the table for fighting or for music, except that he used to bang Ariana Grande.
Oh, he did. Good for him. I did not know that. Okay. So this is already off to an interesting start. Ric Flair shows up.
Yes. And they have a slap match. He was overseeing a slap match.
Were they the Russian guys? Have you watched this on YouTube? Because
yes, I've seen this. It wasn't the main Russian guy, but it was some other Russian guy who lost to some other guy. But this was literally. Did you ever see Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas?
No, I've never seen it. It's probably
literally watched it. This is like one of these things where I think if you had to create the image of this event in your brain, you'd have to be on some kind of psychedelic drug. It was just beyond bizarre. And then at every turn, it kept making the right turn towards Bizarro World.
All right. So you have women dancing half naked atop a building.
Yeah.
You have dudes smoking marijuana.
Yep.
You have all different kinds of music, hip hop, R&B, rap, rock, a whole nine yards, right?
Yeah.
You have professional wrestlers.
Yeah.
I've been to one of these things
before. Overseeing slap matches.
Yeah, I've been there before.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden
Swanson and Rittner in South Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. That was just a normal Saturday night.
No, but that had a purpose. There was a brainchild behind all of that, aka Paul Heyman. There was a method to the madness. There was no method. There was no one driving this bus.
So let's get to the card itself, because there was a card. Joe Fournier defeated Raycon.
Yeah.
Raycon is a reggae guy from Colombia, apparently.
Yeah, and the match was set up because of a supposed beef during an altercation at a club over a girl.
Like, so for real, or is this?
No, like, how it happened.
What was the thing that Kimbo used to do before he got in the real MMA? What was that?
You mean the backyard fighting?
Yeah, well, but there was a whole underground.
That was underground, but that was far more legit than this, because, I mean, you had guys who were fighting. That's where Jorge Masvidal came from, that. Alex Caceres came from that. That culture in South Florida.
We are a combat sports show here, a combat sports website. We have gone back and studied our history. Is this Triller at this juncture UWFI Pancrase, where you don't know, Shudo almost, where you're not really sure if this is legit or not?
No, it's legit. It's just a joke. It's celebrity boxing on steroids. That's what it is.
So this really should be on YouTube to say that you've garnered 1.5 million views. And we're going to get to the other aspect of that when we get to the end here. All right. So we have this fight. We have this reggae guy who's fighting over a girl. Raycon does not land a single punch, but he makes it through the fourth round or into the third round.
Yeah. So Fournier, who had like 8 fights himself, only but never fought a guy with a winning record, did knock him. He knocked him down in the third. He was taking his time, but they're like, "Oh yeah, you know, Raycon's been training for a month straight." Like, this is ridiculous. How is this sanctioned?
Is it sanctioned?
It had to have been sanctioned. Don't
exhibitions not have to be sanctioned?
But I didn't think you could have unsanctioned and sanctioned fights all at the same time, interspersed in the same card.
Yeah, I don't know the rules. I know, like in New Jersey, I think, is it New Jersey, right? Or New Jersey or Pennsylvania, where we're from. One of the states surrounding us, you can't have amateur MMA and pro MMA on the same card. It's not allowed.
Yeah.
I've never really paid attention to boxing, because amateur boxing outside of the Olympics and some stuff you see on ESPN, Fight TV, whatever. Okay, so he trained for a month. That's good. Well, now the next fight, I didn't even realize, Frank Mir versus Steve Cunningham. And I'm watching some of this and I'm like, holy shit, that's Steve USS Cunningham. I remember this guy. And Steve USS Cunningham wins by a unanimous decision. This was actually somewhat of a legit competition between the two.
And remember, Steve Cunningham once dropped Tyson Fury. So this one, because here you actually had Steve Cunningham, who is now in his 40s, hadn't fought in quite some time. Frank Mir, who's on the tail end of his career, weighing 276 pounds. Still is active. You know, I mean, he still fights. He's training his daughter full time. I'm very interested to see the development of his daughter, who's a mixed martial artist. So, you know, he acquitted himself decently, but even he got pieced up a little bit. It's a former cruiserweight champion taking out a UFC heavyweight champion. That's what they want to sit. That's what they want to be able to say.
Right. But at the same time, anybody who knows anything about sports and combat sports and boxing and mixed martial arts will tell you that striking in MMA, even though it's stand up and they talk about, oh, so-and-so worked on their boxing, it is a completely different ball game.
Yeah.
It's not the same. It's the same in the sense that, yeah, you got two guys throwing a punch. Boxers, the best boxers in the world, Bernard Executioner Hopkins, like a surgical boxer. It's a different thing. It's a completely different dynamic. It's not fighting. This isn't shoot fighting.
No, absolutely. I mean, even the most basic, Frank Mir, who is really an intelligent guy, in the interview afterwards, he was talking about all the differences and how he was struggling with it, because instinctually he would do something like to try to even go to grapple. And also remember, a basic stance in MMA has to account for wrestling and takedowns. So it changes the most basic concepts of boxing. And it's actually to a disadvantage for a boxer. So it is a completely different realm. And of course,
it's a disadvantage for an MMA fighter, you mean?
Yes. Yeah. And of course, no boxer is going to step foot in a cage or a ring and have an MMA fight.
Well, I think that's the problem. You have guys that have done it who have been, Andrew Toney did it, Cage Fury fighting championships.
James Toney. Yeah.
Who, Andrew Toney?
You're thinking of the 76er.
Yeah, well, he didn't. God bless his soul. I don't think.
And Ray Mercer.
Right, and they were okay at it, but it would be like taking a wrestler, an Olympic wrestler, a world-class wrestler, putting them in a boxing ring and saying, well, this guy's a world-class amateur wrestler. He's one of the baddest. Brock Lesnar. You put Brock Lesnar in a boxing ring.
Well, that's exactly what happened in the main event. You had an Olympian.
Right. So let's get to the main event. Schmucko Jake Paul, YouTube sensation Jake Paul, who is making it rain with his millions of dollars, and we're going to get to that in a second, defeats, and I'm using air quotes, Ben Askren by knockout. Now, Ben Askren has since gone on with Ariel Helwani on ESPN and Ariel Helwani's show saying that, like, he didn't take the dive. It was a legit knockdown. He couldn't, there's some dispute over whether or not the official should have allowed him to continue. What's your take on all this?
So I do not think it was a dive. It was a legit 1-2. I think Askren could have continued. It wouldn't have mattered much. He probably would have gotten dropped again. Look, Jake Paul is adequate or proficient in boxing, but to the level of a random local guy who goes to a gym. He fought another YouTuber, he fought an NBA player, and then he fought, I discussed this with the hired gun last week, and I think even we talked about it. He found the most accomplished, most heralded MMA fighter he possibly could, who also happened to be the worst boxer and stand-up MMA fighter Ben Askren may be legitimately the worst stand-up MMA fighter of all ranked fighters in the past 10 years. That's how bad his stand-up is. Then throw in there, he didn't have his hip replaced recently. So, you know, I know, yeah, okay, having your hip replaced does alleviate pain, but it doesn't mean with the new hip, you're suddenly a better athlete than you were when you were an Olympian. And he showed up, you know, 30 pounds over what he normally fights at, or 20 pounds, excuse me. This was, he was a hand-picked opponent. It was a name opponent. It's protecting an image. He hasn't fought anyone, who could put him in danger.
Where we are, where we live, where we record from, we're 6 miles from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Jake Paul would walk in any of those Camden, Pensauk in New Jersey, Philadelphia. You go up to the, you know, Brooklyn, the Bronx, you know, Piscataway, that weird gym on the way to Rutgers. He would walk into any of these places and he'd probably get beaten from pillar to post.
Yeah, probably. I mean, he'd probably look like a guy who's been training for 6 months to a year, but there are guys better. There are undoubtedly guys better than him. Who have trained the same amount of time as him, as well as people who've trained more. He is not someone who's ever going to win a belt. This is just, it's pure protection of an image, and it's cherry picking fights.
So here's the thing, and we're going to get to the quote unquote future of Jake Paul here in a second. Jake Paul has this image of being a tough guy, whatever it may be. He calls out Tyrone Woodley, who was in the corner of Ben Askren, right? So you were watching it at this point. What happened?
So, you know, as is not only customary, I think it's required in a sanctioned boxing match. Each participant, each fighter is allowed to have one of the people working their corner go over to the other fighters, backstage area or locker room, and observe the fighter getting taped up for the fight. During it, so Tyron Woodley's standing there, and Jake Paul is starting to talk shit, as well as one of his trainers. I forget the guy's name. He actually is a legitimate boxer. And they're talking about, well, you know, we could do this now. Why don't you fight? Like, all this stuff. Like, so now you're talking shit, and it's the same thing. Like, okay, I would favor Tyron Woodley to beat Jake Paul in a boxing match. But again, but I wouldn't favor Tyron Woodley, who's one of the greatest welterweights of all time in the UFC and in mixed martial arts, to fight a trained professional boxer in boxing. I wouldn't favor him. And that's not a slight to Tyron Woodley. It's a different fucking sport. But so he recently said, yeah, I'll fight Jake Paul, and I'll also fight the trainer, but the trainer's got to fight MMA.
And that'll never happen.
And he's never like, because I'm going to take his arm home with me.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
Woodley's a black belt in jiu-jitsu. Right. You know, like, he will, yeah.
The first thing that because it was the anniversary recently of Hicks and Gracie winning Valley Tudo 1995. I envision that, right? Like, you know, these people talking shit to MMA guys, and you know, and that, you know, okay, come fight MMA. I'll literally rip your arm off.
I'll literally rip your arm off, and then I'll take it off. The truth of the matter is, if you locked the boxer and the MMA fighter into a room, and said only one of you is allowed to come out alive, Tyron Woodley could easily kill another human being. Even if he is a trained boxer, he would beat him within an inch of his life. But of course, that guy's never going to accept that fight.
It's the great thing about mixed martial arts and grappling as a whole is that it does harness all these different things. And we're huge jiu-jitsu proponents, right? We researched it. You know, the little skinny guy that wears pajamas who chokes you with a belt. It's one of those things.
Yeah.
So Jake Paul called and his cornerman, they call out Tyrone Woodley. Okay. After the fight, He calls out Nate Diaz. He calls out he calls out DC. Like, what is the end game here?
Well, the end game is just making money. But here's another thing.
So I have to rip off of the MMA fan base who just to rile them up kind of thing. Is it that?
Well, yeah, because he can't fight a boxer. That's the whole thing. Because if he fights a boxer, he's going to get knocked out. And the other thing is, if you see the way Jake Paul was celebrating after the fight. Now, look, I will give Jake Paul credit on another thing. He did take it seriously to the point of he got himself into very good shape. I will not take that away from him, okay? But when he won, you would have thought that he was Rocky in Rocky IV in Russia defeating Drago. He's crying. He's emotional. Dude, you cherry-picked the opponent. You knew the outcome before the fight. Everyone knew you were going to beat Ben Askren. Like, this is a joke. If you really thought that, if you really challenged yourself, you should have, you know, then maybe you deserve the right to cry. But it was rather ridiculous. He's crying in the ring for beating Ben Askren.
So here's the other thing. And Jake Paul comes out on social media and he has a huge YouTube following. I mean, there's no debating that what he's done and his family's done on YouTube is something impressive to monetize that. I always say it. I watch my kids watch a kid unwrap toys. That kid gets paid for unwrapping those toys on YouTube. It's mind-boggling. Jake Paul comes out on Instagram, claims 1.5 million pay-per-view buys and a $75 million revenue on this show. Now, the only person I know of that I've spoken to in the circles of fight people that I know, and we know some of the same people that bought this, I guess it's you.
Yeah, yeah. And this has been, his assertion has been challenged by anyone and everyone saying that the numbers are inflated.
Luke Thomas, who is one of the best MMA journalists out there, had actually, you pointed me in this direction, shared an article from, I believe, February that Triller as a whole has inflated their numbers that for their, you know, their app and their streaming. I guess where YouTube is more about subscriptions versus views. Triller is, if a view is whatever, 3 seconds long. They've had X amount of views. So it's a little bit of a different thing. Here's the other thing. The news is going to come out on this. You're telling me this drew as much as a Mike Tyson fight?
Or actually more. This is in the Conor McGregor, Manny Pacquiao, Floyd Mayweather range. I mean, this is 1.5 would be, I don't know, fourth best of all time in the UFC. Fifth best.
Yeah, John Nash from Bloody Elbow. We have this on InTheFight.net. He said that he's a business, he's a combat sports journalist, but he is really zeroed in on the business side of the sport. He went out and he did his research and he talked to people less than half of what was originally reported. So that would even, I mean, 750,000? You kidding
that's
me?
That's still really good.
Yeah, I still don't know that. I don't know, man. Like, that's a lot of people. And at the same time, that night, you have UFC Vegas 24, which drew, on average, 900,000 people. So you're telling me that the fight community as a whole, you had 2.5 million people watching something, and it wasn't cross. So I don't know.
Well, I'm not defending it, but perhaps there were Bieberites and fans of the music only that bought the pay-per-view.
I guess that is a fair point. I didn't even know that it was on pay-per-view. I mean, I knew it was coming up. I didn't see it advertised. That is a very valid point that I wasn't thinking of, is the music aspect of it.
Yeah. I wonder if that's their hook. But again, I think it disrupts the show. It's not. I'm all for the integration of it. Just I don't think they did a very good job of it, just like everything else associated with it.
All right, real quick, we've spoken too long about Triller here. What's next for Triller?
J Jake Paul's going to fight. They're going to put their heads together and find the biggest possible name that presents the least possible threat. And that'll be the next fight.
I really don't know what else to say.
Look, this is going to keep going on until at some point he gets knocked out. That's what's going to happen. But he has to be willing to face someone who will knock him out.
Right.
Otherwise, maybe there'll be 20 more of these. He'll find 20 more Ben Askrens, and then he'll retire undefeated.
Holyfield is going to fight on this too, right? He's going to come back out of retirement and fight on this. Is this going to turn into actual fighting, though? I mean, they have the fight. They bought fight. There is.
So he is fighting. So it's strange because their next card is the Teofimo Lopez fight. So they actually have bought the rights to legitimate boxing. And Holyfield's going to be on that undercard.
I don't know. I mean, maybe the end game is to get more people to watch that. I did listen to a really interesting interview on SiriusXM with Teofimo Lopez's manager talking about the move to Triller and the social media aspect of it. I don't know. Let's get to MMA. Before we get to UFC 261 coming up, Bellator had their light heavyweight Grand Prix at Bellator 257. I always love a good Grand Prix. Corey Anderson, he has a big win.
He looked real good, and I just wanted to hear you try to pronounce his opponent's name.
Absolutely no chance of that happening. That's why I'm throwing it to you.
So, yeah, Corey Anderson defeated Dovietsan Yagshimuradov.
Come on now.
What? That was pretty good. So, via TKO, where he's from in his part of the world, that's probably more, common than John.
Do you think that's short for like Dan?
Maybe Dove.
For long?
Doug.
Doug. Okay.
But he had him. Once Corey Anderson took him down in the second round, it was over. It did last till the third round, had him in full mount, took care of him.
Corey Anderson made the news after that fight. Corey Anderson takes to Twitter. This is on InTheFight.net. Corey Anderson has doubled his money in just two Bellator fights, 6 months. He has made more in Bellator than he did in 7 years and 15 fights in the UFC.
I don't doubt him, but I'd like to see the numbers. He could very well just trying to tout. It's in his interest to tout Bellator right now, right? So he could be overstating the fact. The other thing is I'd also like to see the breakdown of the money he earned. Is this from the fight? Is this from the purse he got from Bellator? Or is it because in Bellator, you're actually allowed a multitude of sponsors during fight week and during fight night? Condom Depot pays you money to put their logo on your ass. Whereas, when you're fighting in the UFC, you have just Reebok and Venom at a very cheap amount. So that's the only thing I'd like to see there.
In the other fight, light heavyweight champion Vadim Nemkov defeated Phil Davis via unanimous decision, 48-47 on all the cards. Everyone was really, really thrilled with this fight on social media.
I got to tell you, God bless Phil Davis. Ever since he has not developed at all since the time he's been in the UFC. And even, when he was in the UFC and now, I literally was almost falling asleep watching this fight. That every time Phil Davis is on, he's like NyQuil to me. he's not Mr. Wonderful. He's Mr. NyQuil.
Well, there's certain people you don't like, and he is one of them. Let's get to UFC Fight Night. UFC Fight Night starts off with a nice brouhaha at the weigh-ins where, this is crazy. Jakar Close gets pushed by Jeremy Stevens. He ends up with whiplash, a concussion. He's in the hospital. He can't make the fight. They lost their semi-main event because of a fight at the weigh-in. And then Dana White, has the balls to blame the matchmaker who was there because Dana White wasn't there. So, I want to stop that thing. I would have stopped this little Johnny Wagon.
Yeah, it was really stupid because if Close were to sue the UFC, literally Dana White's interview, he just proved the case. It's unbelievable. So to me, I always thought that they should have security guards a little closer, and you should, the UFC themselves should fine fighters for that kind of behavior. Like, not only, so you mentioned that Close is getting paid.
Yeah, so it was announced yesterday on by Ariel Helwani. He was the one that broke it. It's on our website, inthefight.net, that Close is going to get paid his purse and his personal his show purse. And that only. The fact that they were negotiating that to begin with is outrageous. I think this comes back to our issue with MMA fighter pay. You know, the guy didn't get hurt because he did something stupid. He showed up to get on a scale.
Well, this reminds me real quick, UFC 203 in Cleveland, Ohio, and some of the fighters and managers were in an elevator, and CB Dalla, the elevator, there was an issue with it, and it kind of like fell a few floors, and then they were stuck in it. CB Dalloway injured his back seriously, and he was out for like a year and a half, and they had to negotiate a show purse for that. Like, it's his fault that the elevator go, tries to replicate the movie Speed. It's ridiculous.
Speed, they were on a bus.
No, but remember the opening scene? It was an elevator scene.
That's a not. It's not a good movie. It hasn't stood the test of time.
Pop quiz. I don't know. I don't have a pop quiz. But remember, there's all pop quiz thing. What do you
Yeah,
do?
I wasn't a fan.
Shoot
Robert
the
Whittaker.
hostage.
So anyway, they're paying close. That's good. Dana White was yammering it from the gums that he would have stopped it. Of course he should have. He's in Florida with the idiot governor ahead of UFC 261, which we're going to get to in a second. Robert Whittaker defeated Kelvin Gastelum via unanimous decision, 50-45 on all three cards. Your take on Whittaker, how did he look?
Man, Whittaker looked amazing. This was the best Whittaker has ever looked in the UFC. And even though it was 50-45, Kelvin Gastelum looked good, which shows you how good, or which tells you how good Robert Whittaker was, because that was a game Kelvin Gastelum. Whittaker was inventive, aggressive, athletic. He looked like a champion. It was that impressive.
Does he get Israel Adesanya?
Yeah, I think this definitely bumps him up over Marvin Vettori, who had that lackluster performance. So, to me, I think he definitely deserves the rematch.
It'll be interesting to see the direction that goes. Let's get to it while we're here. The big card of the weekend. Fans back in attendance. UFC 261 from the ViStar Veterans Memorial Coliseum in Jacksonville, Florida. A couple of notes here. So obviously we are still in the midst of a pandemic, and the UFC is bringing 15,000 fans, not socially distant, into a building. There was a lot of questions as to what was going to occur. You can go to inthefight.net. We've covered this. UFC will be giving out masks to fans. That's awesome. That's great. That's a good thing. It's a cool looking mask. The UFC, interestingly enough, has the right to enforce the mask policy in the building, and they're not going to do so.
No. Well, look, this gets into a lot of the politics, but they align with sort of the thoughts and beliefs of the governor of Florida and others that this is not so serious. And Dana White even said as such earlier this week, saying that the media is, going crazy over COVID.
I said it on our site that the UFC was at the forefront of bringing sport back to TV when the pandemic first started, and a lot of people followed suit after them. People will say they didn't, but they did. They followed the bubble idea, the Fight Island, the Vegas, the Apex. I was really hoping that they would kind of go the right way here and say, all right, we're going to bring 15,000 people, 12,000, whatever, 15, but we're going to do this the right way. We're going to see how this works. We're going to tell fans, look, here's your mask. Unless you're eating or drinking, have it on, kind of thing. And it would be a good step and a good litmus test for sport to maybe go in that direction. But nope, no, it's not going to happen because, you know, bullshit right-wing nonsense.
Yes, I agree with you. I believe there should be a mask mandate for all of the spectators. However, I am encouraged that everyone going has to either fill out the health questionnaire on the app or so there is, I forget the name of the app, but so event goers have to download an app and answer a questionnaire regarding their health status, which includes vaccination. And if they're not vaccinated, essentially all the questions that anyone is asked anytime they ever enter a doctor's office now, you know, have you been exposed to anyone? Have you had any, had any symptoms, blah, blah, blah. If you answer yes to any of those things, they will not let you in. And if you do not answer the questions via that app, you have to go to these kiosks throughout the arena or outside the arena, and they will not let you in until you answer those questions. So, again, disappointed about the lack of mask mandate, but I do like that even the UFC is doing these kinds of measures with respect to, you know, vaccination and making sure people are not symptomatic.
Yeah, if people answer it legitimately.
That's true too. Well, so that's where you'd prefer a vaccine passport, but now states are trying to outlaw that, which is that's a whole other can of worms.
Yeah, it's a whole other can of worms for a whole different podcast. I will give UFC credit. They partnered with O2 Industries on the masks, and they are also donating 5,000 ventilators to the American Red Cross. So, you know,
when 5,000 people get sick from the event, they'll at least have ventilators when they go to the hospital.
Exactly. As you're listening to this, we're getting ready for the traditional fight press conference and the weigh-ins. Press conference here tonight on Thursday. Tomorrow, the ceremonial weigh-ins, fans will be there. I mean, again, kind of crazy.
Yeah, I don't get why you would have that part, because that's just unnecessary potential exposure. I think above all right, look, we have fans coming back to the fight, but we want the fights to occur. Why would you take any chance of a potential exposure right before the fight? Makes no sense.
Dana White did say that the fighters are still going to be in some form of bubble. What that means, I don't know. Are they going to come up to the stage as a bubble boy? You know,
they've been quarantining in the hotel. So right. I would imagine that there's going to be some kind of buffer zone.
And look, WrestleMania was in Florida. It was in Tampa. To date, we're a couple weeks after it. There have been no reported issues.
No, you're right about that.
You know, it is what it is. Let's get to the octagon itself. Let's get to the fights themselves. Let's hope they all come off without a hitch here. In the main event, welterweight champion Kamaru Usman versus Jorge Masvidal. What are you looking for here? How do you think this is going to play out?
Well, the big question is, how much different is the fight going to be now that Masvidal actually had a legitimate camp? He doesn't just have to worry about cutting weight. I mean, it was clear for the first fight, he didn't have a gas tank. He came out strong for 2 minutes, looked really good on the feet, much, much better than Usman. But after that, he was essentially done, and he succumbed to the plodding, ground-and-pound style of Kamaru Usman. I think it's going to be interesting. So Usman now, this is going to be his third fight with Trevor Whitman. It's going to be interesting to see, does he try to strike more with Masvidal? Because I would tell you Usman's striking has improved, but if there's one area where Masvidal really could finish the fight, it's through striking. To me, the Usman's best path to victory is a boring ground and pound kind of lay and pray style. And look, at the end of the day, what matters is you have the belt. So it's really, I think Masvidal does present enough of a challenge where he is probably, he is dangerous, because he can knock out anybody on the feet. He's one of the best boxers in all of MMA. But, you know, can he deal with the wrestling and the top game of Usman? It's going to be very interesting.
In the second co-main event, women's strawweight champion Zhang Weili versus Rose Namajunas. And, oh, man, there's going to be some serious, serious bad blood in this one. Rose Namajunas has a... Yeah, she's called Weili a communist, a red. You know, she's really attacked the Chinese, her ethnicity. This is interesting.
Yeah.
And it's not ha-ha, funny, you know, Russians bad, American good kind of thing in wrestling and all that.
Yeah, no. So Rose Namajunas, her family is from Lithuania, and she basically has said that, you know, has come out against the communist government of China and said, you know, better dead than red, and said why she loves America is because of her freedom, and she would even take her freedom over her safety, which I thought was a little creepy and also shows you other things that she believes in, which I probably don't agree with. Nevertheless, look, you know, I'm not going to try to get into an academic discussion here. And none of us are so callous as to overlook the fact that Lithuanians who were subjected to being annexed and part of the USSR, right, had to underwent a very difficult time. They were treated like second-class citizens,
and
all that stuff. And then afterwards, after the fall of the USSR, because of all the economic downturn and whatever, it was a very difficult time, and they were forced to leave. But what's stupid is...
Go ahead, sorry.
No, it's okay. Zhang Weili, she's not an official or an agent of the Chinese government. She's never espoused communist beliefs of China. She's proud to be Chinese because she is Chinese. She's proud of her culture. Culture is different than communism. Chinese culture goes back, just like Lithuanian culture and many other cultures, goes back thousands of years and has a proud heritage. If anything, she should feel, she should actually feel badly for Zhang Weili, that she lives in a place where she can't freely express herself, similar to Rose's parents and Rose's ancestors. But she doesn't, and instead, she's trying to make this a political battle, which it isn't. Zhang Weili is only coming here in the interest of sport, and she's invited Rose to come to China after the fight. Like, she's a really respectful person. This is just idiotic. And
how do you see the fight playing out? Is this going to add any elements of anger to the fight from a Weili's perspective, or she's just all business?
I think both ladies are all business, even in spite of Rose's political stance ahead of this fight. Look, Rose has the speed advantage in any matchup she ever has. But I think you've seen, particularly in her second fight with Jessica Andrade, the slugger eventually gets to her. And had the second Andrade fight been a 5-round fight, Jessica Andrade would have won. And here, you know, Zhang Weili has either the same, if not more power than Jessica Andrade, is also the more technical, faster striker. So I think honestly, this is going to be an amazing fight. But I think come the third, fourth, fifth round, that's when Zhang Weili takes over.
You will put out your official predictions on our Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter ahead of the show on Saturday at In the Fight Show on all three of those. You mentioned her, Jessica Andrade. She is fighting women's flyweight champion Valentina Shevchenko. Is this Shevchenko's toughest title defense to date?
Yeah, by far. Like, this is, you know, and I texted you this last weekend when I first saw some of the promo commercials for this upcoming card. I mean, look, I'm main event. You have great Walter Wade against, you know, the BMF. Very cool. But these are like perhaps the two best title matchups for in women's MMA of all time. and they're on the same card. These are fascinating fights. And Valentina Shevchenko, it has not fought someone with the strength, the tenacity of the person I've dubbed the female Wanderlei Silva. Okay, so this is just an awesome match. And Shevchenko showed her last fight against Jennifer Maia, she could be taken down and held down for a round and be succumbed to a little bit of ground and pound. Well, guess what? Andrade is far better and far stronger than Jennifer Maia. So is this a weakness that Andrade can exploit? And on the feet, I mean, Andrade could put anybody to sleep, and so could Shevchenko. So this is just, this is like high stakes. I just cannot wait for this fight.
What else on the card interests you? A couple of fights that maybe you're taking a look at and saying, this is something worth watching. The whole card is really worth watching. But, yeah, you know,
this is as stacked a main card as you can get. The first two fights, which are non-title fights, great fights. First, you have a rematch. It's Chris Weidman against Uriah Hall. Look, Chris Weidman, obviously former middleweight champion. How much does he have left in the tank? Uriah Hall, it's always been a question of, you know, more mentally, can he put it together? And I still think if the guy can put it together mentally, he has a title run in him. So let's see how he is against the former champ. Then Anthony Lionheart Smith against another up-and-coming light heavyweight, Jimmy Crute. I mean, this is just, you know, two guys who like to bang, and this is going to be fun to watch. I mean, honestly, this is really as good as it gets in terms of a five-fight card, and so excited to watch it.
This is a buy-it kind of card, if you ask me. There are other ways, which we do not advocate for watching shows, MMA, pro wrestling, so on and so forth. We do not advocate those uses, but if you're ever going to buy something, this is one to actually go ahead and physically buy. And now it'd be great if it was on traditional pay-per-view where one could actually hit the DVR button because they go to sleep, you know, and watch it in the morning when they wake up with their kid. But that's just me bitching.
I hear you.
All right, let's get to it. We're going to wrap up the show here. But before we do, this is the Doc's Diagnosis on Professional Wrestling. And got to tell you, coming off of WrestleMania, I was excited to see what happened. I was excited to see NXT going to Tuesday nights. They did fantastic. 800,000 plus viewers. Huge, huge, huge number. They haven't done that in a while. I was very, very interested to see what AEW would do on Wednesday. And they absolutely hit a home run. 1.2 million people tuned in. That's rivaling. That's creeping up on Raw and SmackDown numbers is what that is. So good for the wrestling fan. 2 million viewers worth of TV. Guess what else happens? Cuts happen. And it's every year there's a Black Wednesday. But this one this year, this is interesting. WWE cut 10 wrestlers. I'm going to run some of them. Some of them I understand. Some of them were hurt. Some of them are old in the tooth. They can probably move on. Kalisto, okay. Bo Dallas hasn't been on TV. Mojo Rawley, so what? You know, he could be something. But, you know, Wesley Blake, all right. Tucker, yeah, you know, okay. Chelsea Green, she was having a little bit of a run. Mickie James, she's up there in age. I mean, she wasn't really doing much. She didn't have a spot in the women's division. Now we're going to get to three that really, really pissed me off. Peyton Royce and Billie Kay, the Iconics. Here are two women that were given shit, and they went out and they made it work. I mean, you're looking at a division, and we talk about it, right? We did our WrestleMania wrap-up and all this stuff. You're going to tell me they couldn't have a spot? The Iconics didn't have a spot in a tag team turmoil match? Give me a break. And then the big name, Samoa Joe. This dude is a killer. Now he's hurt. Here is a guy that was going to go up against Brock Lesnar. He was going to be the next big thing to go against the next big thing. Brett, did you hear that WWE released Joe last Thursday morning?
Really?
So they release him last Thursday morning. Everything gets sent out. Do you know what drops around 5 p.m. Thursday night?
What?
the announcement that AEW did 1.25 million views.
Yeah.
WWE is apparently in full-on panic mode over the fact that they let some of these wrestlers go, i.e. the Iconics, Samoa Joe, and now you have an organization that is rivaling their numbers.
I also think AEW could use Mickie James.
I think AEW could use Chelsea Green. AEW could really use all the women to boost that women's division.
Bo Dallas.
Yeah, in some aspects, I would say Bo Dallas. But Mickie James, definitely. Chelsea Green, definitely. Look, Samoa Joe walking out the door is, like, that's not just something like, oh, okay, they released a guy. He has options now. He has options with a major network TV contract and a huge fan base that's following him. I mean, this is insane.
Where do you want Samoa Joe to go? Then I will tell you where I want him to go.
I want Samoa Joe to go two places. I want him to go to New Japan Pro Wrestling first, and then I want him to come over to AEW and do his thing on American TV. And it has nothing to do with the, oh, you're another WWE guy coming to AEW. Look, Samoa Joe's not a WWE guy. He was a Ring of Honor guy. He was a Pro Wrestling Guerrilla guy. You could argue he was a TNA Impact guy. I want to see him on the main screen. I want to see him bringing in 1.5 million viewers and basically double flipping the bird.
I get it. You know where I want him to go? The newest acquisition of the Vice Channel, MLW.
Well, I think MLW is definitely an option for him. Go face Jacob Fatu. I think that would be interesting. I want to see him wrestle Okada. I want to see him go do his thing in Japan against Tanahashi. All those guys, Will Ospreay, Switchblade Jay White. But when you look at it, like, look, MLW, great TV deal. They're going to be the lead-in to Dark Side of the Ring. But it's not TNT. It's not TNT on primetime. This isn't, I'm not saying this is Hogan showing up in WCW. This is Lex Luger showing up on the first Nitro if Samoa Joe walks out on the stage at Dynamite in 90 days.
Yeah, except it will be expected. But yes, it will have a big impact.
Well, and that's why, no pun intended.
No pun intended.
That's a place he could go too. I mean, and they're all working together in some form or some fashion. So, which I think makes it really interesting, you know. Is he an NWA guy? There's some, I wouldn't mind seeing him go there to wrestle certain guys. NWA world champion, Nick Aldis. NWA lost steam with me though.
Yeah. You know what? He's such a good hand. It'll be good wherever he goes.
How do you cut a guy like that? It was just pure ignorance, right?
Yeah. The same way that you think that Mandy Rose can wrestle.
Right. Exactly.
So,
I mean, it's just one of these things that it's tough to wrap your head around on how certain things happen. Here's a guy that stood out in the rain for 45 minutes in a poncho, and then you cut him. And he's happy about it. He tweeted about it. CM Punk, a whole bunch of people went in and said, hey, congratulations, man. You're out of there.
He was miserable.
Oh, he had to be miserable. They wouldn't clear him to wrestle. This is one of those things. He's been cleared by his guys. WWE wouldn't give him the right to go somewhere. And unlike a Daniel Bryan, because I'm sure Daniel Bryan, part of the deal was, I'm going to go somewhere else, but my wife and her sister aren't showing up on TV anymore either. And you lost it. You've now lost the reality show, you know, unless you clear me. Samoa Joe's going to go somewhere. He's going to make an impact, maybe pun intended. It's going to be interesting.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it.
I am looking forward to it as well. I'm also looking forward to more coverage of mixed martial arts, professional wrestling, and boxing on InTheFight.net. Friday, we have tomorrow, the weigh-in, the debut of the weigh-in, talking about the best that was in the week and the lead-in to the fights over the weekend. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at InTheFightShow. Listen to us on Sportinarium or anywhere you find podcasts. Sportinarium.com, at Sportinarium on the Twitter. We will see you next week. Hey, enjoy the fights this weekend. This is going to be great.